Well, Halifax and this Unitarian Universalist, Universalist Unitarian, depending how you look at it, this community are definitely places I remember through some, though some of it has changed. I lived in Halifax for over 20 years through a curious cross-section of times in my life that spanned everything from existential meltdown, chaos, hard and tough times, as well as epiphany in finding meaning, joy, and purpose. It is here, in this room, that I decided to answer a call to the ministry. My conversion to Unitarian Universalism was spectacularly unorchestrated. I stumbled into this faith as a result of a meandering search, Google search, one day when I wondered, whatever happened to Lotta Hitch-Manova, queen of the public's service announcement for the Unitarian Service Committee back in the 50s and 60s, and a favorite childhood hero of mine. You could see even as a child it was clearly Unitarian material. So I came upon the UU principles, read about that, and serendipitously landed on the doorstep of this church one icy January morning over a decade ago. It was so icy that day, and I got off the bus and slipped and slid, flailing wildly, trying to stay upright. Poor Opal, my guide dog at the time, wasn't doing much better with her forelegs. And a man got out of his van over at the intersection of Inglis and South Park to assist me. He said he was going to a Quaker meeting, and for a second I considered, his van must be warm, and Quakers are pretty good people too, aren't they? And I was thinking, where is that church anyways? But so in that crossroad instance, I chose to persist, to keep going down this road. And minutes later, he went off to his meeting, and I came through the doors, greeted, I think, by Ann Knight Gorman, and then entered this sanctuary. In the Bible, stories of conversion are quite spectacular. St. Paul on the road to Damascus and so forth. Before his conversion, Paul was known as Saul, and he was a zealot, a Pharisee, who intensely persecuted the followers of Jesus. Quite a badass. Me? Well, on a similar vein, I was a bitter, angry former Roman Catholic who had left the church at 13 years of age before they decided to throw me out. And in the intervening decades before arriving to this faith, I dabbled in Buddhism and meditation and spiritual reading and the odd group, yoga, and even a charismatic evangelical church. Nothing stuck. My conversion to this liberal faith lacked burning bushes or thunderous voices or other divine intervention. But the impact of hearing that day long ago a loving community sing two particular songs, Gather the Spirit, and We Laugh, We Cry, truly slayed me in the spirit instantly. To this day, I move to tears when I sing, or apparently think, or hear those lyrics sung. In my life, music has served as a reference system for touchstone moments. The lyrics remain somehow hardwired to my memory. The melodies link directly to my heart and spirit. Hey Jude? Yeah. Carnival, Quebec City, 1970. My brother's 56 Ford, a carload of hippies with cold feet. Or if I go further back, Sur les ponts de Berry was sung by my mother in lieu of traditional lullabies. That was our song. The song In My Life reflects, I think, how most of us integrate changing relationships, sad and glad times, uplifting and heartbreaking moments, loving and disappointing times, beginnings and endings. All the places of our lives have their moments. Anne Lamott asks, where do we even begin in the presence of evil or catastrophe, dead or deeply lost children, a young wife's melanoma, polar bears floating out to sea on scraps of ice. What is the point of it all when we experience the vortex of interminable depression? Or conversely, when we recognize that time is tearing past us like giddy greyhounds? It's frightening and disorienting that time skates by so fast. And while it's not as bad as being embedded in the quicksand of loss, we're filled with dread each time we notice life hot-footed out of town. One rarely knows where to begin the search for meaning, though by necessity we can only start where we are. In our wandering, the journey itself leads to some kind of ecstasy. After Choir is going to help me out with this song.
Thank you.
So we're running on the long side, but hopefully you'll hang in there with us, and if you, of course, need to make an escape, that's fine. There will be cake to replenish our, to nourish ourselves after. So my ministry is in Kamloops, British Columbia, where I serve a very tiny Unitarian Universalist fellowship. It's the place where, as my dad would say, I hang my hat. It's home for now. Kamloops sits at the confluence of the North and South Thompson Rivers in the central, south-central interior of the province, surrounded by rugged wilderness. It's a good-sized town now, with a regional population of 90,000, that serves a wide radius of small ranching towns and people who live in the area, farmers and so forth. It's surrounded by mountains, and it's home to the Suquamish or Shuswap First Nations people. In this semi-arid climate zone, the weather is very dry, quite hot. As you can see, I'm dressed for Kamloops weather today, not Halifax. And the temperature reaches often in the summertime, the low 40s. It's been quite an experience for me getting used to small town culture. Okay, I'll leave that part out. I don't think it reflects very well on me as a minister. So, the settler history, the National Railroad was built there on the toil, sweat, and deaths of many indentured Chinese workers who were exploited for the project that served the whole nation quite resourcefully. Prospectors, miners came through, contributing to the expansion of businesses. And of course, we are renowned for being for the legacy of the Kamloops Indian Residential School, which still stands as a museum today. I know a lot of people in Kamloops now, and I was fortunate, very fortunate, to meet one amazing fellow. Richard Wagamese grew up in the Wabesimung First Nation in northwestern Ontario, but made Kamloops his home for the latter part of his life. He was such a gifted writer and journalist. Books like Medicine Walk, Indian Horse, and many other award-winning titles. The guy was a living paradox, though, a complex yet also simple man whose intergenerational demons sometimes pushed him into deep depression and addictive behaviors. Thoughtful, expressive, funny, and kind, Richard was a friend of the fellowship and a friend to me. Days before his death, he said this: "Actions born of contemplation are wiser than those made of quiet desperation." If all that's true, and I feel it is, then I have grown some in these 61 years. I have learned to become a better person. And from that, maybe it's the years ahead that will be the richest of my life. A quiet man moving forward gladly beyond all expectation. So, living up high in the mountains on the north side of the Thompson Valley, when you put ears, the altitude pops your ears as you drive up to where I live. Deer and apparently bear this week, from what I hear from my neighbors, and even mountain lions amble through looking for food. The sun is intense, the sky very large, and because of the dryness, we have dozens of varieties of wild sage. All of this makes me think about eternity. And I believe that every location, every place we hang our hat and call home offers some kind of ecstasy. Spiritual teacher Ram Dass said, "We're all just walking each other home." So despite hurtful legacies, broken hearts, elusive dreams, I believe we're wired for revelry. The world always survives into another day. The tide may be rising, but so are we. Will you join me in, I guess the after part is going to lead this out, and you all going to join in? Okay, well, I'm going to wrap this up. Others on the go here. We live trying not to be tripped up by major global sadness, difficulties in our families, or the death of old pets. In the grip of struggles, chaos, and pain, the instinctive questions surface. Why? Why me? Why now? Who is to blame? And in a world of divisive politics, polarized perspectives that play out in blatant acts of racism, ableism, and classism, it's very difficult to sit with all the intolerance, hatred, anger, and fear-mongering that surrounds us. It seems our culture is one of, I'm right, you're wrong, shut up, there's no more discourse. Our hyper-informed times deliver a stream of witness to all the inequity, the abuse of power, and we feel outrage, or numbness, or an overwhelming urge to hide under the covers for a decade or so. As Unitarian Universalists, we hope to separate and distinguish ourselves from this noise. Somehow we know better, should know better, are better. But our idealism and our intellectualism, thinking about beloved community, isn't enough to make it so. It takes courage to be who we are called to be. In his last days, Richard Bachamese wrote, "You can't test your courage timidly. You have to run through the fire, arms waving, legs pumping, and heart beating wildly with the effort of reclaiming something vital, lost, laid aside, or just plain forgotten. When you do that, you discover that we shine most brightly in community, the whole bedraggled, worn, frayed, and tattered lot of us, bound together forever by a shared courage, a family forged in the heat of earnest struggle." May it be so, and amen. So in lieu of a response time, seeing as how revelry is our theme, I suggest we close the service and extinguish our chalice. I will close with the words of Richard, and we move to the party room out there, and the cake and coffee and hospitality, which is a hallmark of our faith too. All we have are moments, so live them as though not one can be wasted. Inhabit them, fill them with the light of your best intention, honor them with your full presence, find the joy, the calm, the assuredness that allows the days and hours to take care of themselves. If we could do that, we will have lived.